Okay, good afternoon. Welcome back. So my hope is that for you as a couple, that you can leave with perhaps some practical things that you can take and apply to your relationship, even today. So the first thing, we're going to spend a little, just briefly, on brain research and talk a little bit how we were created, that we were created for relationships. We were created to connect emotionally. God gave you the hardwire to do this. Emotional connection, what does that look like practically in our relationships? And then finally, responding to bids. So have your auction bidding sheets ready. No, not really. It's a different kind of a bid. All right, so first, the human brain. Let's look at this together. Psalm 139:14, it says, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, that my soul knoweth right well. So we could talk about many things that amaze us and put us in awe about God's creation. And one of those things is right here in our heads. If you think about the brain, which is the size about the palm of your hand, weighs 3 pounds, and has nearly 100 billion neurons firing in it. And each of those neurons have nearly 1,000 to 10,000 connections to other cells, muscles in your body. Think about how much is going on right now as you're sitting here. I mean, you can be looking at me and thinking, man, I wish he'd just shut up and get to sit down. Or you can be thinking, I hope my spouse hears this. All at the same time, right? No, it is fascinating. And recently, or not so recently, it's been a number of years, that there's been this term neuroplasticity. Perhaps some of you have heard of that term. But the idea is that neurons that fire together wire together. And so Brother Arlen referenced the verse in Romans 12:2 that talks about renewing your mind, right? Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed through the renewing of your mind. So the reality is what we think about and where we put our attention and direction literally begins to change our brain. So one of those pieces in our brain is called the mirror neurons. Okay, as the name implies, as you look in the mirror, you see a reflection. So God has designed it so that even at a young age, right, where you can copy each other. So when I see someone engaging in a certain behavior, the same neurons in my brain are firing when I watch them engage in that behavior. Isn't that fascinating? I'm not doing it. I'm just seeing it. So it's a virtual simulation of another person's action. So the amazing thing is that not only does the mirror neuron allow us to simulate someone's behavior, but it actually also transfers information related to sensory and emotional. Okay? How many times have you been next to somebody or saw somebody and they slice their finger with a paper cut? What do you notice? You cringe. Yes, that's right, because it's painful, even though it's small. And so the reality is not only does mirror neurons allow us to connect to behavioral changes in our spouse, but emotional experiences and sensory experiences in our body. Now, some would say, well, then how do you know you're not the one doing it? That's where the other part comes back, that your body is communicating, well, guess what? My finger is not sending sensory information back to our brain that says, your finger's cut. But we still experience it like as if we did cut our finger. That's the whole idea of empathy, right? Empathy is feeling with someone. It's resonating with their experiences. So we know what it's like to experience sadness and joy and laughter and all of these various things. Now, your spouse or someone you're communicating with or talking with may have had very different experiences. So you may not be able to connect to the specific aspects, but you can relate to what it feels like in your body to have sadness, to have empathy with experiencing fear. Which is why in Romans 12:15 it says, rejoice with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep. When we hear of tragedy, we experience sorrow. When we hear of someone come to Christ, we rejoice. We can experience that. And the beautiful thing is that Jesus Christ, our high priest, in Hebrews 4, says he knows what it's like and he can empathize with us. Not only because he's God, but because he became man. So as we think about empathy, empathy in itself is not an action in a sense, okay? We can have empathy. We can experience feeling with someone, but it takes compassion to move into action, right? Actually, Matt opened up with that love is not just a feeling. It's an action. So I want you to consider you are on the streets of Chicago, okay? And you're walking along texting. Maybe you're in a hurry to get to meet your spouse or a business meeting or whatever. And you come up on this scene right here, that picture. What's the first thing you notice? Just think in your mind. What do you notice about that picture? Is it the fact that it's a woman? Perhaps. The fact that maybe she was drinking some coffee. What is it that you notice? The reality is, if I notice that she is standing in my way to where I'm going, I will not experience compassion for that individual. I have to connect with that individual's suffering. And in a similar way, in our marriage relationships, in order for us to experience compassion, judgment does not coincide with compassion, right? When we're judging our spouse, we will not experience compassion. And the fascinating thing related to brain research is that the same area at which we experience compassion is the action center of the brain. So let's look at this, an example from Jesus. Let's read this together. Luke 7, 11 through 15, it says, and it came to pass the day after that he went into a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him and much people. Now when he came nigh to the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. Already you can see this is a woman that has multiple losses in her life. And now she's alone. And much people of the city was with her. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her. He connected with her suffering and her situation. He said unto her, weep not. And he came and he touched the casket. And they that bare him stood still. And he said, young man, I say unto thee, arise. And he that was dead sat up and he began to speak. And he delivered him to his mother. His compassion led to action and responsiveness. Okay, so next we're going to talk about emotional connection. What word comes to mind when you think of, quote unquote, emotionally connecting? Vulnerability, intimacy, caring, togetherness. Yeah. Real, risk. It's all of those things, isn't it? Isn't it amazing how scary that is, how it speaks to our core? So I'm going to play one more video. This is the last video. But it's of a couple that's in therapy, and they are disconnected. So we just talked about what emotional connection is. Vulnerability, intimacy, togetherness, quality time. Now we're going to see how painful it is when it doesn't happen. So this couple is actually in therapy with Dr. Sue Johnson is her name, but some background is that they have been to multiple therapists, and they are at a really desperate place, okay? So you may not be in that situation. So what I'd like you to do is to connect But the last time you had a disconnection in your relationship, what did that feel like as you watch this? You'll see most of the wife, she will be communicating. The husband, he's an avoider. He was in the military. He learned well to stuff his emotions. And you'll see that. Watch the body language as these two communicate together.
I don't even need a who's right. I don't need to always be right. I would just like to be heard. I'm sorry. I hear that you feel that way, Rhea. I don't mean it to be like that. I love you. That would be okay. I don't need to hear that everything I said is right. I don't really agree with you, Rhea, but I hear what you're saying. I love you. And I don't know what to do now, so I gotta go.
Right. So you help me. You're saying something incredibly powerful to this man. Okay. What you're saying to him, if I'm hearing you right, is you're saying to him, Matt, I don't need you to be perfect. I don't need to be right. I don't need you to be right.
I don't need you to fix it right this second.
I don't need you to fix it. It's okay for me to be disappointed sometimes. I just need to know that I'm important to you and you can reach for me. That's all I need to know.
I'm sorry you're upset, Rhea, and I love you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Care about how you feel.
Yes.
I care that you're hurt.
I don't mean it to sound
like
that.
And even though we're getting caught in this dreadful dance here, I love you. You need reassurance, yeah? That's what you're telling him?
Yes.
You're saying to him,
I love
in those
you,
moments,
even though it sounds like I don't love you, and even though I don't know what to do for you, and I can't really be this person, and I don't have anything for you, I do love you, and
Even though you might be telling me, Matt, that you don't know how to be with me right now and that you're overwhelmed right now, what I need is somehow to know that you're still struggling to be with me. I matter to you and that you love me in spite of all this.
Because I don't really know that he loves me right now.
Right. I need reassurance. That's what you're telling him? Yeah?
I just don't know that he loves me, really.
Can you tell him that right now? Even in those dreadful moments, it would help me so much not to spiral down into despair, to know that even though we're caught in this dreadful clash of titans, that I still matter to you, that you love me. Can you tell him that? That's what I'm longing to know. That's what would fix it for me in that moment. Can you tell him
that? It would help me calm down. And it would help me stop trying to be right or to make my point to you if you could just
reassure me.
Somehow reassure me and tell me that you love me. Or make some gesture that would just
reach for me, yeah? If you reached for me?
Anything would be nice to make me feel like you don't just have nothing for me.
Right.
So notice, it really didn't have anything to do with what they were talking about. What she wanted to know was, do you really love me? At the core, are you going to be there for me if I reach out to you? Because what was playing out, which we don't know all the details, right, wasn't conveying that, not responding to her. Oftentimes, marriages don't fail because increase in conflict happens. Certainly there is increase in conflict. But the root cause is from decrease in affection, a decrease in emotional responsiveness that leads to this right here. Because it's painful not to be connected. And we will try anything to be connected because we're relational beings. Which is worse, conflict in marriage or emotional disconnect in marriage? The reality is it's emotional disconnection, right? It's the decrease in affection and connection that leads to increase in conflict in relationships. So what does fuel connection? How do we stay connected in a busy world with stress coming from different areas? And what does it look like? Couples are always making bids for each other's affection, bids for each other's connection. But we're constantly, throughout the day, we make bids that essentially are saying, are you still there? Will you respond to me? Do you love me? Real life romance is fueled by day-to-day humdrum interactions. The reality is that romance is built through the mundane. As comical as it sounds, romance is built in the Kroger aisle when you're there with your spouse and they ask you, do we have milk at home? And you say, you know what? I don't know, but I'll go get some anyway. just in case. Basic, simple, instead of responding apathetically or, it's not my job to take care of the grocery list, right? It's not the big things. Check out this study in newlyweds. So this is newlyweds, a time of infatuation, right? A connection, not always, that's not always the case. But for couples responding to bids, on average, 86% of the time were still married after 6 years, compared to those that only responded 33% of the time were divorced after 6 years of marriage. These are small day-to-day bids. They can be as meaningless as "it's raining so hard today" or "I need you." A bid is inviting our spouse into connecting with, resonating with our experience. And sometimes we miss that, right? So what are bids? What do they look like practically? So they can come verbally, as simple as, "While you're up, could you grab the ketchup for me?" It's a bid. Or, "Wow, you look amazing in that outfit today." You're noticing them when there's not hidden meaning underneath that, right? Or, "I blew the presentation I had today." Hopefully I won't be telling my wife that tonight. Or nonverbal, meaning just the touch. We've talked about the touch. Or, you know what, between you and your spouse, you have some quirky gestures that only you know that brings laughter to your heart. That's connection. Facial expression, gestures, opening the door, those are all saying, "I notice you." So, once we know what bids are, how do we begin to respond to them? What does it look like in our lives when our spouse makes a connection? So we're going to go through a couple examples here. We're going to go through two examples, and what I want you to consider is, how do I tend to respond? So we have a turning towards. We're turning towards our spouse when they make a bid to us. We can also turn away from that bid, or we can turn against. So let's just take this first one. It's perhaps in the evening, and one of the spouses is looking out the window, checking out the sunset, and they say, "Did you notice, right, the beautiful sunset tonight?" Right? It's beautiful. So a turning toward would be, obviously, this is not just physically, but emotionally. "No, I didn't notice. Tell me why it's beautiful to you. What makes it beautiful to you?" Right? They invited me into what they see as beautiful. I want to know, and I'm going to turn towards that. Or I can turn against, and maybe I'm sitting on the couch with my phone, say, "Hey, didn't you notice? I'm on my phone right now." Right? Turning against. Here one spouse is asking to connect, and the other one feels interrupted. Or turning away, just pretending, not responding at all, being silent. Or, "I would really appreciate it if you would pick up your clothes off the floor." Turning towards, that probably annoys you, doesn't it? "I'll pick them up now. Sorry." Wow, that's a tough one to do. Or turning against. "Why? You never take out the trash." Right? Either or turning away, leaving the room. So the idea is, these are simple bids. We do these every day, many times a day. The reality is, in the humdrum, in the day-to-day, we build trust and connection by responding to our spouse's bids. That's where it starts. And there's a hierarchy with these bids, meaning if my spouse doesn't respond to my bid when I ask them to please get the ketchup when they're up, I'm sure not going to ask them to sit down and have an intimate conversation. See what I mean? The deeper we go in vulnerability, when there's responsiveness, it opens up the pathway for vulnerability. And it's still risky, but it certainly helps with the risk and the fear of opening up to those deeper bids. So this sounds fairly basic and easy. Why don't we do it? Well, there's a number of reasons. Let's talk about just four. First is just mindlessness. So just the idea that we miss how simple and basic yet profound this type of connection is, and how profoundly it impacts our relationship, this trust building, this peace that answers the question, are you there when I call for you? Will you respond to me? Do you have my best interests in mind? Do you love me? We miss that. Or we intellectualize our spouse when they come to us in stress or pain. Be like my wife coming to me stressed out because of her busy schedule. And I respond to her, you just need to plan better. Right? It's pretty basic. It's not that big a deal. She's stressed out. I missed the bid. She didn't want planning help. Tech neglect. I think this goes without saying. The reality of how much this consumes us. And it gets in the way of our relationships. There's a video out there. It's a commercial. I think it's a Coca-Cola commercial. I think it's called Social Media Guard. A couple is down on out on date night, and they're on their phones like this. There's siblings sitting in the living room, and they're on their iPads. And then there's, you know, different scenarios. They're connected with a phone. All of a sudden, the music changes, and they put on this guard that goes all the way up like this on their heads. So they have to bring their head up, and they look at each other for the first time. Wow. My spouse, right? It's sad. It's very sad and funny at the same time. But it's true, right? It gets in the way of bids. Negative emotions. Sometimes either the bid itself is wrapped in negative emotion. Like, it wouldn't occur to you ever to empty the dishwasher, would it? And so what happens is we respond with a blame statement back, like, you never take out the trash. So the idea is underneath the emotion, right, is the need. But it can also happen in receiving bids. If you think about it, if I'm stressed out and overwhelmed, it's going to be pretty hard to be present with my spouse. I'm going to miss bids. Right? So it goes both ways. Negative emotion can become a barrier, but it can also be a point of connection, deep connection. And then finally, protest behavior, meaning this can be withdraw or, you know, arguing back or calling your spouse 10 times in one night, right? That you're protesting that going back to that video, it was painful to be disconnected. And so she wanted anything, a sign, something to know that her husband loved her. Sometimes it comes out in behavior that's protesting that disconnection. So lastly, it's helpful to remember that for each of us, we are different on this. This is a continuum here, right? Connection frequency based on our personality, our makeup, our experiences. So if you look over here, some of us desire greater and more frequent connection. Well, as others have greater and more frequent desire for independence. We're in this balance of separateness and togetherness. And it is a balance. And I just say that because that's a reality that is there and to be aware of. So I want to leave you with one last thing. In your booklets, you turn to the last page in your booklet. Well, I guess it's not the last one, second to last. It says, letter to your spouse on the top. So what I'd like you to do is, I'd like you to send you away to draft a letter, a love letter, to your spouse. And it walks through this, right? First, it has you reflect. What are the areas in my life that I too often allow get in the way of connecting that are barriers of receiving your bids, right? What is it in your life? What does that look like? Next, if appropriate, offer regret or forgiveness. Now that I'm aware of this and the power of these connections and the impact it has on my relationship, acknowledge those times that I've missed, right? And then affirm. How would you like to communicate your love for your spouse and your desire to be more responsive? What does that look like? Convey that to them. Take the opportunity to answer those questions of, will you be there, right? Will you be responsive? There was a researcher that did mathematics on this to predict the amount of time that both spouses are actually present and in a place to respond to each other. And he calculated it to be something like 9 to 10% of the time. Think about that. Because of either one spouse is in a different place or just the pressures of life. So the reality is we will miss bids. It's part of life. But by knowing this and understanding it and recognizing it and communicating it to our spouse, even when we miss them, continues to build that connection, that deep trust that fuels romance, that fuels vulnerability and connection in the relationship. So may God bless you and thank you so much for your attention.